The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week, I guess an abbreviated week for those in the U.S. that observe Thanksgiving on Thursday, a couple of days off, I suppose, for quite a few of our listeners. In any event, we will be broadcasting all through this week with live programs, and we're happy that you can join us. Last night here at Edstone, we had our Thanksgiving ball. They had it actually in the Edmond campus as well, so we were able to enjoy some fine dining, fellowship, dancing, some good fun downstairs just last evening, and of course we're able to enjoy, as many often do with the Thanksgiving meal, lots of leftovers even through to today's lunch, so that was nice. Speaking of food, later on in the program, I'll be talking some about physical health, what Herbert Armstrong taught us about cause and effect. We won't dwell just on food alone, but certainly that's a part of it. Hopefully, I don't put a damper on some of your Thanksgiving plans, but we have had some struggle with sickness on both campus, and so this is certainly it's something that I've stressed a few times in recent weeks with the students, and hopefully you'll benefit from it as well. Corruption and division. When you examine the heads or the governments of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Judah, that's really what we're seeing more and more of. So much corruption, and of course, our nation's just rife with division. This was a theme we picked up on, I think, a few times last week on this program. Of course, you can add to the level of corruption just the massive amounts of irresponsible spending as well. We're seeing that discussed here in the UK with the UK elections coming up on December 12th, so just a couple weeks away now from the big election here in the UK, and I guess Friday night they had, I don't know if it was so much of a debate as it was just giving the candidates an opportunity to sort of talk about their platform, what it is they bring to the table for the people of Britain, and both sides, well, just talking about the Conservatives and the Labour Party, the two big parties, both parties are vowing to spend and spend and spend. There's really not much difference. You have the Conservatives who want to spend a ton of money, and you have the Labour Party that wants to spend even more than that. This is from The Telegraph. It says, the huge sums being pledged during this election campaign are thought to be unprecedented in modern times. Here we're facing all of these problems, these troubles, these struggles, this division, this corruption even, and the amount of money that we're spending to just expand the nanny state. The figures, you can't even wrap your mind around it. It says the Conservatives' plan, these are Conservatives, mind you, their plan for spending amounts, amount to the biggest Tory rise in state expenditure as proportion of GDP since Harold Macmillan. Well, this is some British history I'm not as familiar with, but it's a lot, suffice it to say. It says, yet they are dwarfed by Labour, so Labour wants to spend a whole lot more than that. It says, with Mr. Corbyn yesterday pledging another $58 billion to compensate female pensioners, a policy that was not even included in the party's manifest. So they just put together the manifest recently, and now they're adding to it. Oh yeah, $58 billion. Let's tack that on as well. Make sure everyone's happy. Make sure everyone's satisfied. Another piece at The Telegraph, same publication. It says, there are obviously gargantuan differences between the Tory and Labour manifestos, but there is also similarity in the direction of travel. In other words, they're both going in the same direction. There are some sharp differences, certainly Brexit being among them. But what about the direction overall? This author says, call me a party pooper, but I'm worried that in order to win this election by the biggest majority imaginable, the Tories have conceded certain fundamental arguments that will make it easier for Labour to win the next one. So they have to try to get a majority, a larger majority, so that they can get through Brexit, finally. But what are they having to do or promise in order to get this done? In order to focus just solely on this election? They're having to promise all sorts of things. All sorts of handouts to make the voters happy. Look, you vote Tory, you're going to be satisfied too. And also we'll take care of Brexit. But be assured, we've got plenty of handouts for everyone. That's the road that we're traveling on. All parties. It says, no words on reform, no belt tightening, no individual responsibility. Thatcherism is dead. Long live the nanny state. That's from Tim Stanley at the Telegraph. Long live the nanny state. That's the message coming in from the Conservative Party here in the UK. You have to think. I mean, the short-term gain here or aim is to try to get a big enough majority so that Boris Johnson can carry on with his agenda. But what are they sacrificing in the long run? It makes you think, just how many more elections are we going to have before the return of Jesus Christ? Amos 7 and verse 8, remember, says God will not again pass by anymore. Now that's referring to Jeroboam, obviously. But here we are in the Jeroboam end. How many more elections are we going to experience before everything just breaks down and falls apart? So these articles are basically saying that if they just had a better candidate, the Labour that is, then Jeremy Corbyn scares a lot of people in Britain, because he's so far to the left. But these articles are pointing out how that if they just had a better candidate this time around, they'd probably do a whole lot better. Now, we don't know how it's going to play out on December 12th, but still. I think you can see in the United States a similar predicament that the Democrats are in. They just don't have that that Barack Obama of 2008 that sort of galvanizes the Democrats. There's all these candidates, but none of them really are rising to the level of Donald Trump as far as really exciting their base. The only thing that seems to excite the base, at least the radical leftist core of the base, is to just go after Donald Trump, and so they're doing that. But this is going to really have a boomerang effect on the U.S. I will not again pass by them anymore. How many more elections will there be in the United States, in Great Britain, or in Little Judah? We talked on Friday's program about the indictment against Benjamin Netanyahu. Quite a few similarities there, comparing Judah to Manasseh. Corruption, division, deep state. Carolyn Glick posted a piece. This was after our program on Friday. She writes, in Israel Thursday, well, to paraphrase, she talks about how that Thursday morning the indictments came down Thursday night. Thursday morning the big story was politics. How that Avigdor Lieberman, he was the one holding the country hostage, keeping any coalition from coming together. And she talks some about the leftist party, the blue and white party, the media is all behind them because they want to take down Netanyahu. And then by the end of the day Thursday, she's writing her column on Friday, but she says by the end of the day Thursday, the indictments, that was the story. She says, the left stands on two planks, destroying Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and eternalizing the regime of Israel's unelected bureaucrats. It's, again, very similar to the United States. We have to destroy Donald Trump, and we have to eternalize the bureaucratic regime, the unelected bureaucrats. They have to remain in power for life. This is Little Judah. It says the party's figurehead, speaking of the blue and white party, Benny Gantz, was tempted to join a unity government with Netanyahu that would guarantee he would serve as prime minister in a rotation agreement. So they had the discussions last week. They were working on some kind of a rotation agreement. This is Benny Gantz from the Blue and White Party. It says, but his comrades would not let him. Joining a government with Netanyahu would be a betrayal of their very reasons for existing. So unhappily, he walked away. Here was Gantz trying to be a moderate, but his party base would not let him. You cannot join up in a coalition with Netanyahu. He is the enemy. He's the enemy of everything that we represent and believe. So you've got to walk away. And that's what he did. That's what he did. Unhappily, it says. He walked away. Glick goes on to talk about what Netanyahu has been going up against. Again, the big story Thursday, all through the day, politics. And then Thursday evening comes around, and that's when the Attorney General, Mandelblit, he steps forward to the microphones and unleashes this assault, this attack on Bibi Netanyahu. Glick writes, the underlying message was crystal clear. The day after Benny Gantz returned his mandate to form a government to President Rivlin, after he failed to get a sufficient number of coalition partners to build a government, Mandelblit said that there's no point in talking about whether or not Israel is going to new elections in March. So Gantz had his opportunity. He had to walk away. The base wouldn't let him. And then right after that, here comes the Attorney General saying, all right, let's go after Netanyahu then this way. Glick says here, voters don't decide anything. The lawyers do. Politicians are irrelevant. The only people who count in Israel today are the unelected attorneys who run the country. And this is really scary. This is scary stuff. This is supposedly the most successful, productive democracy in the Middle East. And yet, look at who's running the country. It's the unelected bureaucrats. It's the lawyers, the attorneys, the Attorney General. She says, but then we already knew that. And the fact that, as expected, Mandelblit announced sternly that his indicting Netanyahu on three charges of breach of trust and one charge of bribery was at best anticlimactic. The game was up, if it was ever in play in February. So she goes back and says how that in February, in the lead up to the elections earlier this year, he came out and said, "Well, we're probably going to file charges," and Glick writes that how Netanyahu and his party, they were leading in all the polls at that time by a wide margin. And then this Attorney General, he takes the unprecedented step of announcing his intention to indict Netanyahu on the charges. This was back in February. And then as soon as that happened, the polls started to level off. The Blue and White Party were making great gains, because Netanyahu was taking such a hit in the media. They hate him. They hate him, and so they try to make him out to be a crook. And they had some success in doing that. His head, as she writes, Netanyahu's head was on the chopping block. That was made clear back in February. And so this is how the head of Judah, this is how its government just ground to a halt. It's been nothing but gridlock ever since. And they haven't been able to form a coalition government. And then now this. Glick says, ever since Mandelblit gave his recommendations, he and his comrades have been the only political actors with any power to speak of. So here's this Attorney General in Judah with more power than Netanyahu, who's been the prime minister for 10 years. She says, our actual leaders were rendered bit players in the lawyer's regime. Mandelblit's announcement Thursday just made it official. So the leaders really have their hands tied behind their backs, the politicians, as these attorneys, these lawyers, are calling all the shots. Now, again, one difference that you could highlight between Judah and the U.S. is with the parliamentary democracy, the chief executive, if you can call it that, the prime minister, it doesn't have as much power as the president does, who's voted in by the people. Now, there is a balance of power in the United States for sure, but as we discussed last week, particularly when we went through that William Barr speech, if you remember, it was Barr basically saying how that the founders, they did want a presidency to have some power, some authority, so that things could get done. Not the kind of power that an authoritarian would have, but nevertheless, a powerful office. And so I think you're seeing, now we haven't really seen yet how Netanyahu will fight back on this, but we've certainly seen how President Trump is fighting back, and he's doing it with some bit of success. The fight's not going to end, but as my father has written, the more they come after the president in the United States, the more their own lawlessness is exposed. She says here, Glick does, to the cheers of Israel's corrupt media, for the past 3 years, our legal overlords have gnawed away at all aspects of political power in Israel, and in the process, not that they cared, they corrupted Israel's legal system from top to bottom. It's a sickness in Israel's legal system that goes from head to toe. And so here they are, they're gnawing away at the political power of their own leaders, the media, the corrupt media, and they're quite happy. They're quite happy to see all of this corruption just run roughshod over the legal system as well. Here again, just to highlight the point about Jeroboam and the authority that he has, you look at, we discussed this last week as well, all the judicial appointments that the president has made. Just in 3 years' time, two of them on the Supreme Court, 2 out of 9. And of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as you might have seen from headlines over the weekend, she's not exactly, well, she's just old. She's just old. And if she dies, she's a radical leftist. You can only imagine what President Trump's enemies will do if he has the opportunity to replace that seat on the Supreme Court. He's already filled all of these judicial seats, the next level down from the Supreme Court, the appellate level. And he's flipped, as I said last week, he's flipped 3, I think, out of 11. Just in 3 years' time. That is, again, a pretty big difference between the political process in the U.S. as compared to Israel and even the U.K. In any event, back to this article, Glick says, from beginning to end, their criminal prosecution of Netanyahu has been a travesty of every norm in democratic societies governed by the rule of law. Carefully edited and wholly distorted recordings and transcripts of police interrogations of Netanyahu, his wife, son, and advisors were systematically leaked to the media. Now, all of this, I know, sounds very familiar. This is the way the left operates, not just in the U.S. It's all over the world. The fact that every such leak was a felony offense, was of no matter. And here you had Netanyahu crying out, saying, look, you need to investigate these leaks. He was saying this to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General said nothing. The Attorney General did nothing, because the whole aim is to go after Bibi Netanyahu. Forget about the leaks. Forget about all of the other felonies being committed. The objective here is just to take down the prime minister. She says, as the probes escalated, overseen by state prosecutor Nitzan, police investigators extorted Netanyahu's closest advisors to coerce them into becoming state witnesses against the most successful and admired prime minister Israel has ever had. That's Benjamin Netanyahu. Longest running prime minister ever, the most successful, the most admired, but none of that matters to the radical left. They hate him. They hate him. Listen to this from Carolyn Glick. She says, investigators threatened Netanyahu's former spokesman, Nir Hefetz, that they would destroy his family and bankrupt him if he didn't turn on Netanyahu. They finally succeeded in breaking him after incarcerating him in a flea-infested jail cell for 15 nights, denying him sleep and medical treatment, and bringing a young woman he knew into the interrogation room next to him, and then threatening to destroy his family. These are the investigators that Netanyahu said last Thursday night. These are the investigators that need to be investigated. But this Mandelblatt, he won't do it. Or Mandelblit, I guess is his name. The attorney general, he won't do it. It says here that Mandelblit, who claims not to have known about the abuse of witnesses, but then refused to investigate the allegations, and Mandelblit, who promised after publishing his recommendations for indictment at the height of the election campaign that he would approach Netanyahu's pretrial hearing with an open mind, well, that promise was exposed as a lie when the chief prosecutor left the hearing 2 days early to take her family on a safari in South Africa. Wouldn't want a little thing like the prime minister's legal fate to ruin her chance to see the elephants. Says the same Mandelblit refused to investigate Ben Ari when recordings emerged last month showing that she submitted a false deposition to a court in relation to a lawsuit submitted against her by a former subordinate attorney. And so all of this corruption within the deep state, all of these investigators, it's the same with the U.S. That story from Friday about that FBI agent or that lawyer working at the FBI that falsified information, that went and looked, that took a document and changed the information so that they could get the FISA warrant. That's been exposed. But in the case of Israel, you don't have an attorney general who's concerned about upholding the law for both sides. It says here, then, of course, there's the substance of the charges themselves. The charge that Netanyahu accepted a bribe is based on an invented notion that positive media coverage of a politician is bribery. The notion that press coverage can be considered bribery exists nowhere in the democratic world. It reminds me of what that congressman said about Sondland, who said that no one in the world told him that there was a quid pro quo. But never mind the evidence. Just to get him to say something like that in his opening statement, that was enough. The Democrats ran with that. Here we are in Judah, little Israel, where this notion that press coverage can be considered bribery, that exists nowhere in the democratic world. Nowhere. Here's Judah breaking new ground, setting a horrible precedent, as she brings out in her piece. Glick says, no prosecutor in the world has ever indicted or investigated a politician or a media organization of having committed bribery involving the provision of positive coverage. When have you ever heard of something like this? But this is one of the charges. Oh, yes. It says, senior American jurists, so even lawyers or attorneys from America weighed in and tried to help this attorney general. Don't go there, they said. These American jurists appeared before Mandelblit in Netanyahu's pre-indictment hearing to warn him that pursuing bribery charges against politicians for receiving positive coverage is a recipe for destroying freedom of the press and democracy itself. They're destroying themselves. Sickness from within. That's what we're seeing in Israel. And by that, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Judah is what I mean. A dangerous level of corruption. Right at the head. Right at the top level of government. In all three of these nations. Well, she says, finally, it's certainly true that the left shares the prosecutor's hatred of Netanyahu. Blue and white exists to destroy him. But all the leftist politicians and Lieberman who are celebrating today need to understand that Netanyahu, the Netanyahu they love to hate, is their best friend and defender today. If Netanyahu is found guilty of crimes that were invented for the purpose of destroying him, then their goose will be cooked along with his. If you're going to establish this kind of precedent, or if you're going to support this kind of precedent, how long will it be before it turns on you? Before it takes you down? That's what she's saying. It says, politicians may make us happy or sad, frustrated or infuriated, but today in post-democratic Israel, it hardly matters. Netanyahu called last night or last Thursday for an investigation of the investigators. Unless our elected officials join forces to heed his call, they and the voters who elected them will never be relevant again. See, what we're seeing, what we're witnessing, is the collapse of democracy in little Judah, the little Middle Eastern nation of Israel, being ruled by the bureaucrats, the attorneys, the lawyers. It's a frightening scenario, as I said, with respect to the UK elections. How many more elections will we have in little Israel? Well, you consider the UK, you look at Judah, and then, of course, we're coming off of this two-week circus, the impeachment circus, aimed at taking down Donald Trump. He had an interview on Fox News Friday. He had some interesting comments to make with respect to the next stage. Supposing the Democrats can get 218 votes to impeach him, and then it goes into the Senate for the trial. All that will be revealed in that, well, here's what the president said on Fox News Friday morning, clip one.
The bottom line is all of those witnesses, they're all shifty shifts. Don't forget, there was no due process. You can't have lawyers. We couldn't have any witnesses. Great. We want to call the whistleblower. But you know who I want as the first witness? Because, frankly, I want a trial.
Frankly, he said, I want a trial. If they're going to be so crazy and deranged to impeach me over nothing, then, well, let's go ahead and go to trial, says the president. Because in this first phase, it was just all Chairman Schiff's witnesses. He wouldn't let the Republicans call witnesses. He wouldn't allow it. And then he carefully controlled what Republicans could even ask of his witnesses. But it's going to be a very different trial if it moves over to the Senate. And so that puts, you know, we were talking after Friday's program, and we're not here to just be in the guessing game. You can see it both ways. I think there were 231 Democrats that voted for the impeachment proceedings, voted that we have the circus, and you need 218 as a majority to impeach. But if you go in with 231 votes, I think they had only two Democrats that voted no. So if you go in with 231 out of 233, and then you get anything less than 231 after this impeachment circus, I don't see how that could be seen as anything other than an embarrassment and a defeat for the Democrats. They, at the very least, they need all the Democrats on board, because they certainly don't have the Republicans. But if they don't get any Republicans and then they lose some Democrats, even if they have a slim majority to go ahead and impeach, that's not exactly making a strong case before the American people. And then you add to that, as I was discussing with Sam and some others on Friday, you add to that, if the president, like you heard there, is of the mindset that, well, I'd kind of like to have a trial. And if we have that, you can be sure that we're going to call our witnesses. It made me think of the court case that we had over Mystery of the Ages back between 1997 and 2003. It really kind of reached the apex of its activity in 2002 with all these summer depositions that we had, and then it was going to go on to trial. We had lost the case, and then we were about to go to trial for damages, and that's when the worldwide decided, you know what? we'll just go ahead and sell everything to you. They did not want to go to trial because they feared being exposed. You can read about this in Raising the Ruins. And you do wonder if there are a few Democrats, Adam Schiff's probably not among them, but you do wonder how many of them really do. Maybe Schiff is, because he's probably going to be one of the witnesses called to testify. He's been lying all the time. And if he finally has to testify under oath, well, if he himself had contact with the whistleblower when he said later that he didn't, that's what's going to be probed during a Senate trial. How many of them fear being exposed? Some Republicans are saying that they don't think that the Democrats are going to go forward with it. Now, judging by their base, it's hard to see how that they wouldn't after they've gone this far with it. But it's going to be interesting to watch in the upcoming weeks, because they really are caught between a rock and a hard place. And even as all this unfolds, you've got the Trump administration with the Inspector General's report and then Durham's investigation. You've got the Trump administration, this presidency, which does have a fair bit of power when compared to the prime minister in Judah, pressing forward with his investigations. This is what the president went on to say in that Friday interview, clip two.
What you're going to see, I predict, will be perhaps the biggest scandal in the history of our country, political scandal. But I guess that's the biggest, because what's more important than
political? What do you mean by that?
I think you're going to see things that are going to be incredible if it's done right. And I purposely stay out. I tell Bill Barr to handle everything. I wouldn't have to. I could get very much involved, but I purposely don't. And I haven't. And you know what? It's better that way, I guess. I don't have any obligation legally to do that, but I've let them handle it. So you have a Pfizer report coming out, which the word is, it's historic. That's what the word is. That's what I hear. And if it's historic, you're going to see something. And then perhaps even more importantly, you have Durham coming out shortly thereafter. He's the U.S. attorney, and he's already announced it's criminal. And we'll see what happens.
Mr. President,
I'll tell you what, you have a lot of very, very bad people. And, you know, a lot of people say deep state. Right. I don't like to use the word deep state. I just say they're really bad, sick people.
That's the president on Friday. He doesn't go with the deep state terminology. He says they're sick. They're just sick people. They're deranged. They're obsessed with taking down his administration. That's their whole objective in life. They're staking everything on that. They're running next year for the elections. They're running on the mantra, take down Donald Trump. Well, he mentions there the FISA report coming out, and some of that was leaked last week. Now, it was leaked to CNN and the Washington Post, which maybe isn't the best sign in the world as to what's in this Inspector General's report. But still, what leaked, it was pretty damning evidence that there was quite a lot of corruption right within the FBI. This is from Fox News. Just at the end of last week, Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz has found evidence that an FBI lawyer manipulated a key investigative document related to the FBI's secretive surveillance of a former Trump campaign advisor enough to change the substantive meaning of the document. So here's an FBI agent going in and changing a document, I presume a 302, a summary of this interview or this investigation, and they changed it. And it says here that it changed the meaning even. And then this is what they tacked on to the FISA application to get a judge to say, yeah, you can go ahead and spy on them. Carter Page. That was going on in the lead up to President Trump's inauguration and afterward. Listen to what the president said on Friday, clip three.
They thought I was going to win, and they said, how could we stop him? They wrote up the phony fake dossier, the disgusting fake dossier, And they tried to have it put out prior to the election, just to show you how incompetent they were. They spent millions and millions of dollars. Hillary Clinton paid for it, and the Democrats.
It's interesting, too, just looking at the front page of the New York Times today, they've got this story on Ukraine. Russia meddled in the 2016 election. That's the Democrats' stance. And they did it to help Donald Trump. Ukraine meddling in the election, that's a conspiracy. That Ukraine's one of the top three corrupt nations in the world. But as far as Democrats are concerned, they are utterly incapable of meddling in election, even though there's all this evidence that they did. And they did it in favor of Hillary Clinton. But the Democrats say, no way, can't happen, conspiracy. Well, that's what they're looking into, some of them. And the president has gone through back channels using Rudy Giuliani and others to uncover evidence of all the corruption in Ukraine that many in American government were caught up in. That's what they're looking into. You look at the front page of the New York Times, though, and it has an article today about Rudy Giuliani going to the Ukraine. He's looking into digging up dirt. You can see it there in the top left. Why Giuliani singled out two Ukrainian oligarchs to help dig up dirt. And throughout the article, you see dirt, and then again, digging dirt, and then again, dirt, four or five times. If you investigate Ukraine, or if you investigate the Bidens and their association with Burisma, well, you're surely just trying to dig up dirt. And yet, here was the Obama administration investigating President Trump, Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, anyone associated with the Trump family. And in all of those cases, well, now that's just a proper investigation. No digging up dirt on political opponents there. The hypocrisy here, the double standard, is just so obvious, so transparently obvious for anyone that has eyes to see. You can see why the Democrats are getting so nervous and now wondering if they're going to be exposed as they go further into the Senate. Because there is a lot of corruption in the Ukraine. And that was the whole point of the phone call on July 25th. President saying, look, you should look into corruption. We're giving you all this aid. You should look into corruption. We don't want to send millions and millions of dollars to a corrupt state. This is just standard practice. What would people think if they saw all of the transcripts of Barack Obama or Joe Biden to these world leaders and the things that they said? Quid pro quo statements. Look, we'll help you out here, but you got to do this. Look, we'll send you this money here, but you got to do this. Goes on all the time. Well, this latest revelation, listen to what CNN, this is Preet Bharara on CNN last week about this revelation that an FBI agent changed a document, changed the meaning in order to help the Obama people get that FISA warrant application through. Clip four.
Let me bring Preet Bharara, the former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. What's your reaction, Preet?
Well, that's kind of an alarming bit of news. Obviously, based on what Evan is saying, there's a lot we don't know. But given the description he has provided, if there was an FBI agent sworn to uphold the Constitution who can be proven to have altered a document in connection with a legal proceeding, including the obtaining of a FISA warrant, that's really serious. It doesn't get a lot more serious than that. I'd like to know the details of what the nature of the change was, if there's a mistake in some way. Based on that reporting, it doesn't sound like it was. I want to keep an open mind about it, but that's not a good thing. It's a terrible thing. You know, the law enforcement agents and prosecutors who work with them are sworn to uphold the Constitution, sure, but actually even exceed the protections in the Constitution. They have to be of the utmost integrity and the utmost candor, and when, especially you're making a representation to the court, which is what a FISA application is, it's got to be on the up and up. And I know there's been a lot of political fighting about whether or not there was proper candor, and there was this back and forth with the House within the House Intelligence Committee when the positions were reversed between Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff, and that looked like a lot of politics. This particular thing that Evan Perez has just broken the story on does sound serious to me.
I mean, when CNN is saying that this is serious, they hate Donald Trump. When they're saying this is serious, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, we suspect. Again, maybe the IG report will be a big disappointment. But if this is just the first of many, You can expect more reports like this coming from even the mainstream. They shouldn't be surprised, not given what some conservative sources and what many of these Republican administrations or committees were turning up 1, 2, 3 years ago. But then CNN finally is going to come along and say, well, a dishonest FBI agent? Think about all those text messages between Strzok and Page. And they're surprised by this? They shouldn't be. But here, even now, for them to come out and say, you know what, this is really bad, that must mean it's really bad. Well, my father says in the article, August 2019, we went through this a few times last week, can the president get control of his divided government? He says, since Donald Trump became president, a dangerous level of corruption has been exposed in America's federal government. And really, you could say the same about UK. You could say the same about Israel, little Judah. This dangerous level of corruption. He says further on, and we see officials who consider themselves above the law, who are willing to use deceit, slander, and practically any other means necessary to hold or to reclaim power at any cost. That's what we're seeing. Well, we'll change an official document. We'll lie if we have to. It says, to make this reality more alarming, none of it would have seen the light of day had Mr. Trump not won the election. But God wanted it exposed. And I'll explain why in this article. Now it seems that the harder the president's enemies work to destroy him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. Well, we'll have to hurry back and finish off today's show with our study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely, at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Herbert W. Armstrong wrote back in 1954, he said that the knowledge of how to live should be the first interest of every person. That knowledge, he said, is divided into two phases, the physical and the spiritual. How to be in vigorous, clear-minded, perfect health, which depends upon the physical laws of nature, and how to live in proper relationship with God and with neighbor, which depends upon the spiritual law, summed up in the Ten Commandments. So that how to live charge is divided into two phases. And it's easy when we emphasize the importance of the spiritual phase to maybe not emphasize enough the importance of the physical. But we need good health. We need energy physically to serve God well. At the end of 2 Timothy 2, you can just look at verses 19 through 22 on your own time. It talks about how that there's different vessels in God's house, some made of gold, silver, and wood. The point being that there's different levels of quality. We're all at different levels of growth and development as far as character and God's ways are concerned. But we certainly all want to be going in the same direction, traveling in the same direction. God's church is made up of people coming from all walks of life, some coming in, you know, 30, 40 years ago, some coming in 3 or 4 months ago. But we're here to grow. We're here to improve. We're here to get healthier spiritually and even physically, as I just read to you. One passage of scripture that is very much a health law is found in Philippians 4. Verse 4, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice, let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand." This is a law, the law of moderation. Paul says, let it be known even. Set a right example in this regard. Don't overindulge. Mr. Armstrong said this. Well, this is from 1967. It's a Plain Truth article where he's talking about God's healing, his miraculous healing. And in this article, he points out where doctors have their place. But at the same time, he says, you know, look, for you, the individual, I don't know what your faith is like, whether or not you have the faith to believe in God's healing promises. And so I can't say absolutely, well, in this case, you shouldn't go to a doctor, and in this case, you should, because a lot of it amounts to or boils down to what kind of faith you have. But then he says this, healing is not a thing to experiment with, but, listen to this point he makes at the end of it, but why not solve this whole question by avoiding the cause of sickness and disease and keeping healthy in the first place? Then there's no problem, is there? I mean, if you avoid getting sick in the first place, then you don't have to worry about whether this should be a doctor thing or not. How serious are we about dealing with the cause of sickness? It's easy to just focus in on the effect. Oh, I've got this now. Now what do I do? But what about the cause? What about avoiding sickness, disease, or whatever it might be? Mr. Armstrong said this, "The very first trouble with our deteriorating physical status is that we take sickness for granted. We seem to assume sickness is natural and necessary. A cold or fever is merely a sudden, violent elimination of toxins and poisons that you have injected into your body by wrong diet, which has broken God's physical laws. So there's a penalty to be paid." And then when requesting an anointing, obviously we want to go before that or go into that with a repentant attitude, a willingness to change, to make the changes. We've all obviously made mistakes and committed sins physically, for sure, many times. But I just want to encourage you to look back at the cause of sickness and disease. Don't take it for granted that it just happens, you know, every year or every other year or maybe twice a year. Think about the cause of sickness. Jethro Kloss wrote in his book, Back to Eden. This is an older book from 40, 50 years ago. He says, "Man's intelligence has made it possible for him to become grossly perverted in almost everything, food, appetite, bathing, etc. Man does not go astray from nature because he lacks intelligence or instinct, but because he wishes to gratify his own desires." Here we have all of this knowledge. Here we have all of this health knowledge available to us. And there's differing opinions, I understand that. But like with respect to the college, as I tell the students, we've got a nutrition course, we've got all of this literature by Herbert Armstrong, we've got the Healthful Living booklet, we've got a lot of material, a lot of content. We don't get sick, or we don't go astray from nature, as Kloss says, because we lack the intelligence or we lack the knowledge. It's because we wish to gratify our own desires. That's always what it comes down to, cause and effect. Look at 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19. It says, "What, know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? for you are bought with a price. Therefore, verse 20 says, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Our bodies, our minds, we don't own them. They belong to God. He's our maker. He's our creator. Paul says, glorify God in your body and in your mind. Mr. Armstrong continued, this is on in Missing Dimension and Sex. He said, God created us that we must eat food to live. He equipped us with the sense of taste. God gave us this sense so that we might enjoy the necessity of eating. We should therefore exercise our senses to distinguish true natural health-building food from those false foods which destroy health and then give God thanks and really enjoy the eating. My wife in her nutrition class at the college, she really does spend a lot of time on talking about the good foods that God made and then the false foods that have been engineered by man, those foods that hurt our health. Genesis 3 and verse 19, it says, in the sweat of your face shall you eat bread till you return unto the ground. For out of it were you taken, if dust you are, for dust you are, and unto dust shall you return. See, we're made from the earth. We were made from dust. As Mr. Armstrong says here, so it is literally true that you are what you eat, and dust you are. He says, since you are merely food converted into a human body and mind, is it not plain that whatever food you put into your mouth has a very great deal to do with what you are and with your health or lack of it? What we put in, that's what comes out. that's what we turn out to be. And you can see it all around in our society. People that have just lost that spring in their step, people that are suffering, and they're not dealing with the cause, they're dealing, and this is, of course, the great flaw of Western medication, or medicine, I should say, it's just always, always, always dealing with the effect instead of looking at the cause of the problem. In his book, Sugar Blues, William Dufty, he said, vegetables, fruits, berries, and nuts, these natural sources of what we now call vitamin C, had been sweets until concentrated refined sugar was marketed. See, the concentrated refined sugar, that's a product of man. That's man getting in there and engineering something that's had so many harmful effects on physical health throughout the Western world. It says sugar was an unnatural sweet that had been robbed of its vitamin C in the refining process, which was when 90% of the natural cane was removed. They got rid of 90% of the what God created and just concentrated it highly on the refined sugary substance. And then they put that into every product you could imagine. The sugar in the Western diet, especially in the United States, we have students coming from, you know, international sites or areas, and they come to the U.S. and they can't believe how sweet everything is. Even things that aren't even supposed to be sweet, like bread, for instance. They come to the U.S. and we just put sugar in all of our condiments, our bread, not just the sweets, not just the treats, everything. And you add to that, I've talked to the students here recently too, just about the difference in society today compared to when I was their age, and how that you didn't have a Starbucks, or in the case of the UK, Costa, or some of these other coffee shops at every corner, where it's not just coffee with the caffeine, but the sugar, the cream, the syrup, everything added to it, just loaded each day, in the morning, at lunch, through the day, loaded with sugars. It's taking its toll. Cutting back on that certainly will go a long way toward eliminating the cause of so much sickness. One last point that I can emphasize here. I just read this the other day from this book, The Way We're Working Isn't Working. It's emphasizing the importance of sleep. And it says here, no single behavior we've come to believe more fundamentally influences our effectiveness in waking life than sleep. Sleep. It says further on, one well-respected sleep researcher argues that Sleep may well be more critical to our well-being than diet, exercise, and even heredity. All of that, though, is important. What we're eating, as Mr. Armstrong says, we are what we eat. Exercise, I haven't really dwelled on that much, but that's certainly an important law of good physical health. Sleep is certainly crucial to good health, and that's something that, again, as you get older, you can really let down in all of these areas. But now would be a good time, not just because we're coming into Thanksgiving week, but we're coming into the darker days of winter, and it is hard. And certainly when you're in the UK and sun's going down before 4 p.m., it is hard to get out and to receive sunlight and to get the motivation to exercise. But at the very least, just carefully considering what it is that we're eating would be a big step in the right direction. Well, hopefully in the programs to come, I can spend a little bit more time on this as we go through the darker days of winter. But that's all that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.